Welcome to Work of Art, the Mason Gross podcast, produced out of Rutgers University's Mason Gross School of the Arts in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We are a community of nearly 1,200 undergrad and graduate dancers, musicians, theater artists, filmmakers, and visual artists from around the globe. My name is Laurie Granary, and I'll be sitting down with some of these artists, discussing what fuels their curiosity, their passion, and their impulse to make. Elizabeth Munkemeyer does not have a poker face. This is a supreme compliment. She oozes joy for music, making music, talking about music. She's a powerhouse undergraduate student, a music education and clarinet performance major who also happens to be a member of Rutgers Symphonic Winds, Pep Band, Rutgers Kirkpatrick Choir, and the Marching Scarlet Knights. This hasn't come easy. In our interview, Munkemeyer says, "I did not audition well my first or second semester. I was not where I wanted to be. It made me really down on myself." She's candid about the pressure college students face from all sides, but mostly from themselves. People talk a lot about the word passion in relationship to making art. Munkemeyer possesses passion in spades. But what strikes me about her, and about so many Mason Gross students, is her grit. Her ability to enter a practice room alone, day after day, close the door, and do the work. What may appear easy or natural on stage is the result of a daily grind of hours and hours of repetition. This, in other words, is the work of art. Elizabeth, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. You know, I wanted to ask you, how did you know that you wanted to pursue music in college?
I'm really happy to be here. Thank you. I was an honors track student. I studied a lot. My mom was a teacher and my dad was an engineer, so they were very serious about school. And I'd been in a choir when I was probably starting in about first or second grade with my church. And I was there pretty much every Friday and every Sunday, and it was wonderful. I loved being in that choir. But I never really saw myself going to school for music until I was doing clarinet. And the path to get me to clarinet was very long. I started doing voice in the choir, and then I took violin was my first instrument. So I played violin all the way up to about ninth grade in high school. But I had friends who were in marching band, and I really wanted to do marching band. And you can't march with the violin, even though my dad wanted me to. But I took my mom's old clarinet, and I tried to play it, and I did so successfully. And it just sparked something in me. And I knew pretty much after I had been in marching band, I was juggling all three things then. I was in orchestra, choir, and band, and I was hooked. I knew I wanted to do music once I had been in everything.
So you were talking about your mother's clarinet. Were your parents musicians then?
You know, my parents joke that they don't know where this came from. They say that the talent is genetic, but my mom played when she was about my age, when she was in high school, like that was her instrument. And then my sister played the clarinet when that was her instrument. I think my dad played a little bit of guitar, but they're really not that musical. My mom sings in choir. My dad doesn't sing.
So how did they react to this decision? I mean, you were quite young making this decision and making this announcement. How did they react to your decision?
You know, having two very academically driven parents, and I have two older sisters, but one of them's a lawyer and the other one is a biology major. She's actually a hydrologist now, so they both have very practical, you know, traditionally practical jobs. And I did well enough in school that my parents were convinced that I would probably go an academic academic in the traditional way, and or business. And my parents were very hesitant at first, as parents would be, because they were worried that I wouldn't have a lot of job prospects, and they didn't really know how serious I was about music. It took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. I had to work my butt off, and I had to talk to my parents about doing lessons, and I had to convince them that this was what I was serious about. And I did so by doing all the ensembles I did and putting all my effort into it, and they eventually saw, which was great.
You know, I suspect that we have some prospective students listening, or maybe their parents. What would you say to someone who wants to apply to Mason Gross, wants to be a music major, but is hesitant, fearful?
I say that is very reasonable, because it is really scary to be so passionate about something. But if you're that passionate about something, then it means it's what you're meant to do. And I was scared. My parents really didn't understand what you'd go to do when you go to music school, because pretty much every day out of high school, I would either be during school, I'd be in an ensemble, and after school, I'd be in an ensemble. So they didn't really know what those classes would be if I was in mostly ensemble. They didn't know. And I actually got to shadow. I didn't quite shadow a student. I came and I visited, and I was able to go to certain classes. I was given a schedule. I would have loved to shadow someone, which I have people. I let people shadow me now, and it's great. And I think it's a really great way to know if you want to do it, because you can see the kind of day that you're working with. I think music school is rigorous, and I think that you need to really care about what you're doing to succeed and to successfully get through it. I will say it's not for the faint of heart, because you're going to be whining and complaining a lot. But I think you need to know that it's what you want to do in your heart. And then I think you need to go and visit schools and see what you would be doing at those schools, because I think that's really important to it as well.
So how long each day would you say you're running and working?
Oof. If you're a freshman, you typically have more 8 a.m.s. Most of my classes start at like 9 or 10. But if I start on like a Tuesday, it started about 9. And rehearsal gets out at 9 p.m. And then sometimes you want to practice a little more, or you want to get more food.
So this sounds grueling. Why do you do this, Munkemeyer?
Because you could always see yourself in like a alternate universe. Like, what would I do if I didn't have music? But I would not be the same person, and I would not find as much joy as I do going to the things that I do. Last year I didn't really dive in as much as I had hoped. And when you're going to these classes every day and you're not passionate about it, it's draining. It's not for the faint of heart. I love going to theory because it makes me think, and I love going to oral skills because I'm constantly engaged. Like, you're always being graded pretty much, and you're challenged because you have to think really critically about the thing that you're going to be doing, basically sight reading. And I've gotten a lot better about planning, because I couldn't plan before, but now that I am able to plan and bring food with me, I'm not as grumpy, and I think I can see like logically, like, oh, in addition to doing music, my body also needs food and sleep. So you really need to be good at your time management, and that doesn't come really easily to me. So I actually had to work on that in like my first year, but I just love it too much. I don't think I could be doing anything but music. I was thinking of other things, like maybe nursing or biology, but to just do band on the side, or to just do choir on the side, that doesn't light the fire within me. You know, I couldn't.
You said something earlier that I want to follow up on. You said that it's scary to be passionate about something. What's scary about it?
Well, my parents say to me, you and your ideas, because when I have something in my head, I will go for it. I'm stubborn. I'm persistent. And music is something that can be so time consuming if you're so passionate about it. So you have your academia, so you have your classes that you have to go to, and then you have ensembles, and then you have your individual practice time. And then you've got all the different, like, I have these amazing friends who are also amazing musicians, and I want to collaborate with them. And you have to think about how many hours in the day can you really sanely commit to something and not be scared of it, to be scared of something that's inside of you that says more, 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 like, this is what I need to do. You know, it's a good kind of healthy addiction, you know, to but it's scary, because if you haven't really been able to tap into that if you're in high school. And then once you're in music school, it's all, you can just jump into it, you know, and it's a completely different experience from high school. So
is it intimidating to meet people who are as passionate as you are and as talented as you are? What's that like to not be the proverbial big fish anymore?
It's incredibly intimidating, because you come from a place where you're the first chair. You've been working, and then you think that you're going to be ready to go to another place and still be that person where you still could be the most hardworking, but still comparatively, when you audition for things, you're not always the best. And that can really get you down, going from first chair to maybe last chair. First chair in high school and the last chair in music school is scary, but you have to think about the relative talent around you, and you have to think that it's a place to grow. And I love that, because I think if there's people ahead of me, there's always more places and ways for me to grow and to become a better musician. And there's more opportunities to do so. Like, there's like 4 more chairs for me to grow in this ensemble, you know. And it's not always about being the first part, but sometimes we, as musicians, we're perfectionists and we hold ourselves to that. But it's so scary to be around people who are of the same mindset of you, even though it's so incredibly engaging and exciting. It's to know that you're not alone is a great thing. Like, humans, we're pack animals. We love knowing that there are people like us, and we love communing together. But there's always that that drive to be the best, and to have that same drive with a bunch of other people, it's scary, especially if you hold yourself to that standard of being the best. You know, as I think a lot of us do, some of us are very music oriented, and I applaud people for that. And I'd like to think that I am, but there's always the traditional who is the best at every school, every ensemble. You know, it's not always the biggest thing, but it's always in our minds as musicians, because we hold ourselves to that standard.
It's so important that you haven't given in to despair, because I'm sure some people who are perfectionists would go to that place very easily and just say, if I can't be the best right away, I'll give it up.
Yeah, you know, it's to think like that is very, it got me. I did not audition well my first semester or my second semester, and I just wasn't where I wanted to be. And it made me not the person who I wanted to be at that time. It made me really down on myself. And the second semester, it got better, and I started picking up, and then realizing, like, there is so much more work to be done. You can't just give up. You got the weight on your back. You have to keep carrying it until it becomes fruitful. And this semester I placed really well. I'm so excited. I mean, it's great. I'm not saying that there's always a difference in ensembles, and I think that we have really great ensembles at Mason Gross, but I wanted to be in the ensemble that I'm in now, and I was really happy about it. But there's, like, even though I'm in the ensemble I want to be, there's never a place to stop working. Like, even if I was first chair in wind ensemble, which I wish, but I'm not. So I always have something to look forward to, something to keep working towards, because if you let yourself get into that place, it's terrible. I really don't wish it on anybody. I think that there's so much support especially at Rutgers and Mason Gross, that we have to give ourselves a break, and we have to just keep pushing forward, because we can't just stay stagnant. Music is constantly transforming, and so are we as music students who are learning to be professional, classically trained musicians. So I think it's really important to always reach out if you need help.
I was actually just going to ask you, is how do your professors help you in this way to not get stuck in your head? To, yes, of course, be committed, work hard, but
do they help you? How do they steer you to not kind of freeze up and get down on yourself? Where do you see them figuring into this?
I think we're incredibly lucky that we have some very compassionate professors at Mason Gross. There have been, I'm not very proud to admit it, but there have been times that I've been late to a couple exams, two of them in the same class, and they were performance things for RL skills. And they know that ultimately it's your career, and they know that they are supporting you to do what you do. So if I showed up, it only takes showing up to show that I came like a couple minutes late. I had slept in. I was so upset, and he saw that it really mattered to me, and I was still there, that he let me take it still. And I have my teacher, my private teacher, an amazing resource. You have to know who you're going to be coming to study with, because that's the person who's going to be your biggest advocate and ally for your career, especially for the next 4 or 5 years that you're going to be here. I'd say that your professors want you to succeed, and they want you to dive deeper into what there really is, because to just do the surface value, I think a lot of the kids who are musicians genuinely want to get better and want to learn more. And I think there's always that drive, especially if you're a musician. And I think that drive is so important. So I think there's a certain degree that the professors can facilitate it, but I think that drive is one of the most important things about being a musician. And if you lose it, you always get it back. You know, if you've had it, it'll always come back.
So I guess you have to understand that it ebbs and flows like anything else.
Definitely.
Can you give me an example of a time when a faculty member has just really steered you in the right direction, picked you up, just been there for you?
I would have to say that my current teacher, Mark Dover. I had gone through a really bad mental health period in the spring semester. I don't sugarcoat things. I think that mental health is a very important thing to talk about, and I was really depressed. And it was really hard for me to do anything but go to my classes and my ensembles. And every time I came to my lesson, I was just disappointed in myself, because it wasn't a long time, but for the time that I was, it was one of the hardest things, especially because you always have that inspiration running in the background. Even if you're depressed, you're like, I should be doing these things because I want to be doing these things. And he just sat with me, and he didn't let me vent to the point where it was unproductive. But then he said, okay, well, we're going to be productive this lesson, and we're going to do duets, and we're going to make music this lesson, and we're going to get through it. And you're doing so much, and you have to be patient with yourself. And that was so important to me, because I've had teachers who will let you just keep talking, and it won't get productive. And I know it's not their responsibility, but it really helped to have somebody say, well, here's the productive part of talking about it, and then here's how we're going to be productive with music, because that's what we're here to do. And I'm really happy because I pushed through it, especially that I have some really great friends. And there's really amazing resources at Mason Gross, because it's going to happen. You're a college student. There's so much pressure on you, and you're going to get anxious or depressed, and you're going to need some place to go, and you're going to know that your professors are going to be there for you. But you also have to take care of yourself and go and get help.
I really appreciate your talking about that, because it still seems as if there's such a stigma when it comes to mental health. And so many of us experience this. And you're right, the pressure is tremendous, you know, financially, socially. You have a lot of things coming at you. And I know, Elizabeth, part of the reason I wanted to interview you is what impresses me about you is how practical you are and how you just kind of keep going forward. And I know you said that this has been a challenge financially for you, for your parents. Being a professional musician ain't cheap. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know you said you were originally on a plastic instrument. Talk about that commitment that you all had to make to get you here.
Yeah, you know, when you're going to be auditioning for music school, and how I knew I was going to start private lessons. Private lessons, if you're going with a teacher, that's at least usually $60 an hour. So you have to think about that. That's a very big financial commitment that I was really fortunate to have my parents agree to, because it was instrumental. Sorry, I had to do it, but it was instrumental to my career.
She's very punny.
I do have a meme page for music memes at Mason Gross. Just kidding. But it was to have my parents agree to do that. And then when I met the teacher, he was saying that I would need a wooden instrument. And my parents really liked him. He was this older self-starter. He owned a music store that we loved and we worked with at our high school. And they felt when we realized about how much it would be to have a wooden instrument, my parents were like, wow. It was mostly smooth sailing, singing's free, the plastic clarinet. I used my great-grandfather's beautiful violin when I played violin. But we were never tight on money. And it was just as a middle class family in the suburbs, and my parents both working jobs, and my sisters both they were living at home at the time. It was hard to think about spending that much money, and we were worried because it's a lot of money to have. It's when you're going into four figures for an instrument that you didn't have to pay for before. And I had still been getting reeds, but that was reeds are not as expensive as the instrument, you know. And I didn't think we'd be able to do it because my parents, they've been like, wow, this is going to be a lot. And I think they were worried that I wasn't serious about it because me and my ideas, and they were worried that I wouldn't keep up with clarinet. But look where I am now. But and then one day I came home and my parents said, oh, you should go in the living room. And I went in the living room, and there Klaus was, my beautiful buffet clarinet, and I love him. And
Klaus, talk to me about this.
He's a thoughtful, compassionate instrument. He took a lot of time. You have to break in wooden instruments, so it was kind of a very good lesson in patience for me, because I was working in a pit at high school, and I had to like play that clarinet for a little bit and then work on my other instrument, which was fun to get, and getting used to a new instrument. But just the fact that my parents had done that for me was so incredibly, it marked the place where I knew that they were going to be supporting me for the rest of my career, just because it was scary, like, to have a 14, 15 year old start deciding what they want to do. And then I was lucky enough when I auditioned here that I got a scholarship. And when I applied for more scholarship, I got more scholarship. And it's always, I feel like the wonderful things that happened to me in my life by my parents are by hard work and by commitment and by the drive. I have a crazy drive. Like, my parents say, you and your ideas. And it's always rang true, because I think if you work hard enough, it really just kind of, if you're fortunate, it falls into place. I don't even think sometimes it has to do with luck or fortune. Like, I've worked so hard to be where I am. And I'm grateful for my parents, because I know it is not easy affording music school, especially with a scholarship. I think in state, I think we're very lucky if you're in state to have such an amazing conservatory basically at your fingertips in New Jersey.
For sure. And I'm wondering if you can talk about, you know, we're always looking for more scholarships, right? You know, trying to explain to people what scholarships mean. And I think you can give the best witness to that. What has it meant to you and to your family to have this money to put toward your education, the scholarship money?
I think that it's already an amazing honor to be able to go to a conservatory, but to have a conservatory determine that you have worked well academically and artistically, it's an amazing honor. And it's enabled me to do this. It was either I was between two schools, and Rutgers was pretty much the same price because the other school gave me a scholarship. And then Rutgers said, well, we really want you here. And I was really, really excited about that. But because my parents had always loved Mason Gross, my mom went to Rutgers and she knew that Mason Gross was great. And I think the scholarship has really enabled me to be here. I think I would have worked and I would have somehow paid it if I didn't have a scholarship to be here, because I had to go to school. But it's like it's a burden taken off for that amount of money every semester. And it's something that reminds me that I'm valued here, you know, because it's so easy to forget that when we're so critical of ourselves. But to know that I am an instrumental part to being here at Mason Gross, it truly makes me feel like I belong. And I love Mason Gross, and I've always felt like I belong, but it's always it really solidifies it for me, you know, because especially looking at that tuition bill every semester and knowing like that much I don't have to worry about.
Absolutely. I'm going to ask you to wax poetic a little bit about Mason Gross to give people a sense of why you chose Mason Gross, right? Because I love that you were mentioning, you know, you have these smaller classes. I think there is a preconceived notion that Rutgers is this huge place where you're just a number. And at Mason Gross, we have fewer than 1,200 students. So you are getting that boutique experience, so to speak. But talk about why Mason Gross, why Rutgers?
Well, I'm not going to give you the spiel, but I'm going to give you the spiel. I, coming from Jersey, you always think there's going to be a certain amount of kids from your school who are going to go to Rutgers. And you're like, I don't want to see these people. And you really won't see these people at Rutgers. Rutgers is massive. And in a very, you can take it in bite-sized portions. You have Rutgers as a big thing, and then you have Rutgers into 5 campuses, and then you have Rutgers into individual schools, and then you could even go into your class or your major and then your individual class size. So I think Rutgers is completely, you can bite off as much as you want to take, and it's completely up to you how big your group of what you would say, the people you surround yourself with. You can choose how big you want that to be. And I think that's so important, because we think, oh, we're going to be a small school and we're not going to be acknowledged by Rutgers. But Mason Gross is a very valued part of Rutgers. And you can either say, you can either put yourself in the perspective of, oh, I'm a clarinet music education major at Rutgers, where there's like maybe like 10 of us. I think maybe, I don't know. That's probably an arbitrary number. Maybe about 15. Could be 20. I don't know. I'm sorry. or you could say, I'm a Rutgers music, Rutgers Mason Gross music major. And then that gets bigger. And then you could say, I'm a Rutgers Mason Gross major. And you say, there's so much opportunity being at a Big Ten university, and also being in a very, very professional music conservatory. You know, I think it's really important to push past that. In high school, you don't know what you want a lot of the time. Like, you're gonna say, oh, like, I don't want to be at like Rutgers. I've heard like it's a state school. State schools are amazing. You think of the opportunity that you have compared to sometimes like the private liberal arts colleges you're looking at. I could not have gone there. There's just so much opportunity that here that I would have missed out on had I gone there.
What are some opportunities that you've had here that you wouldn't get at you know, one of those smaller campuses?
I love the bus system. I know people really hate the bus system, but I think it is so cool. Even as a person with a car on campus, I think it's amazing that with all the different campuses that we have and all the different classes we're running and all the buildings have to be that you have to get to, there's a way, you have a phone and you can just check your phone. You can just hop on a bus and they're like pretty much running almost 24 hours. And when they're not running, there's something you can call that'll pick you up. I think that's amazing. It just makes me happy. Because I lived in a dorm that wasn't close to Mason Gross and I'd have to either walk a lot or take the bus. I also think that there's amazing mental health resources, because we have CAPS, and CAPS is huge in Rutgers because you've got about 40 or 50,000 students with Camden too. But you have a lot of kids who need these resources, and I don't know how big those resources can be at other schools who aren't dealing with as many students as Rutgers is. I think that at Mason Gross, with opportunities I've had is to be in the marching band. Sometimes our marching band is the size of like somebody's class at their school because they go to a small, like we've got like 220 kids in marching band, which is amazing. My high school marching band was about 60, 70, 80 at max when we had our good times. So that, to be at a place where there's so many other kids who think the same way as you is amazing to me. And then my ensembles, I just don't think you could split that many kids up into the different ensembles we have. We have a couple different new music ensembles. We've got three bands. We've got two orchestras. We've got four choirs. you can find exactly where you belong here. And I'm so grateful for that. And I love it here. And I don't think I could really even see myself at another school for my undergrad. I love it here.
You know, you talked before about how you have this crazy drive, right? and you keep joking about how your parents will say Elizabeth and her ideas. How do you balance this drive with not driving yourself crazy?
I can go to my backpack right now and show it to you. It's called my notebook journal, and I have a checklist that I do, and I write all the things I have to do in a day. And A, it helps me feel really accomplished, but B, there's going to be a list. B, it helps me see all the things I do in a day, because we can be really hard on ourselves and not acknowledge what we do in a day and say, wow, I really did nothing today. And then you look at it and you're like, wow, I went to like 8 classes today. I did so much today. But it really helps me put myself in just perspective for my time management, because it's so easy to be like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. And right after my dress rehearsal, I'm going to do this performance thing with my friends, and that is not productive for me. So I like listing the things that I plan to do in a day, and I like planning in the future, because I think that's really important for me, because I need to know there's things to look forward to past what I'm doing right now. I think it's a constant struggle, because I struggle with how much I want to do things and how all the different things I want to balance. And I think you do that when you love music, especially when you love two different parts, which that make up a whole of music. But like if you love voice and clarinet, it's so easy to try and commit yourself fully to both. And I have to pick and choose the things that I really value. And being in Kirkpatrick Choir is amazing. And that's something I value, being in like a chamber choir experience. And then doing band, which I have to for my requirements, but I love being in band. And then to do marching band is completely something that I choose to do. And those are the things that I prioritize. Those are the three ensembles that really light the fire in me and keep the fire going, you know? And if I wanted, I could do acapella, because there's a great acapella presence on campus, and I could do the Voorhees Choir, which is the only all-female choir, and I could do the New Music Ensemble, and I could do the orchestra. It's just like I have to think about the things that I'm going to do right now. Like when marching band's over next semester, I'm doing pep band and hopefully orchestra. So I have to write down and plan my life in the way that's going to make it the most worthwhile to be in those ensembles. Because if you're overcommitted, you're really not going to be contributing as much as you would want to and the ensemble would expect of you than if you were doing just as much as you can.
Let me ask you why music education is important to you. Why you value that enough to be a major, and what you would want young music students to know if you were their teacher.
I'm very fortunate that I grew up in that choir, because when you start off in that church choir, you go from being in the red choir and having people take care of you to starting to take care of yourself and then taking care of the younger kids. And I was also able to do a music class with really small kids. And to just see the light in those kids' eyes when they were just loving what they were doing with music, because they really couldn't put it into many words because they're really young. And to see the kids who are growing through the music program love what they're doing and to help them go through that journey. That's when I knew that I wanted to do ed, because I love people. I love talking. If you can't tell, I really love talking. But you have to accept that when you go into teaching, you're going to be talking to people who aren't, like, you're not going to be in music school anymore. You're going to have to be the person who's responsible for lighting that fire in other people and helping them realize how important music is in their life. And if you don't feel that fire, that it's going to be so hard to impart it on other people. And I think we have to know that it is a grueling job to be a musician and a music educator, because you're always having people think, oh, well, what's the career in that? Like, what do you hope to do out of school? And you say, well, I hope to be a teacher, and I'm probably going to be a teacher. You think it's more concrete than other people do. And it is really more concrete than other people think it is. But you have to know that you're going to be responsible for somebody else's experience with music, and you have to know that that's going to be so important, and you know it's important because you're in music, and you have to take that with a sense of pride and the aspect of imparting another language on somebody. Music is a whole other language for people to express themselves, and to know that that is going to be a resource for them afterward, I think that makes it very worth it, even though you're going to struggle with kids on their phone and kids not wanting to listen and people always undermining music as a career. And I think you just have to know that you're going to push through, and you have to. I keep saying have to. I feel like it have to in a way that, because you owe it to yourself and you owe it to the art that is music and other musicians who've come before you and who are currently with you.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for sharing the fire that you talk about. And your experience. I know you have a long day ahead of you, so I'm grateful that you stopped by.
I'm really happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.